This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's start today with news from the state's highest court. The Governor's Council unanimously approved Superior Court Judge Kimberly Budd to the Supreme Judicial Court. Her confirmation is remarkable for several reasons. She's only the second African-American female justice ever to serve on the state's highest court. She's the third justice appointed by Governor Charlie Baker. And there's this. We know how fraught the judicial appointment process has become at the national level. Are we seeing a little bit of that here now in Massachusetts? Because last week, during her confirmation hearing, Justice Budd raised some eyebrows when she shared her views on a couple of controversial issues, such as the number of people on the state sex offender registry and whether Massachusetts should grant driver's license to undocumented immigrants. So for some analysis, we're joined now by Nancy Gertner. She's WBUR's legal analyst and a Harvard Law School professor and, of course, a retired federal judge as well. Judge Gertner, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be here.
Okay, so let's just dive right into some of the things that now Justice Budd said last week during a confirmation hearing that raised those eyebrows. She did get some criticism for saying that she personally, quote, didn't see any reason why an illegal immigrant couldn't have a driver's license. Now, I think one of the reasons why people kind of looked at that askance is this is an issue that could potentially end up before the SJC. Should a justice be making a comment like that in advance of hearing a potential case?
Well, actually, in one sense, it wouldn't come before the SJC in that way. I mean, she was asked her opinion as a person. What do you think about this? But if the legislation says X, she's not about to say, oh, I disagree with the legislation. I mean, that's outside the judicial role. When I was up for confirmation, I was asked what my opinion of the death penalty was, you know, and I had to give it. Although I also said if the, you know, I know that the death penalty is lawful and I would therefore apply the law. In other words, the question of what your personal opinion is in one box, and being a judge is learning how not to tap that box and to look at what the law required. To some degree, the driver's license question was a personal question,
okay,
not a statutory
one. This is really interesting. So you were asked about, remind me what year you
1992.
Were put on the bench. Okay, so.
Oh, yeah, 93.
Okay, so that bench at the federal level. Here we are in 2016.
Right.
And it's just the politics that swirl around the judiciary at the federal level and the state level now. I mean, would you agree with me when you say that it's just much more fraught, very, very different?
It is. It's totally different. And it's an interesting question about why that's the case. One explanation could be that we have gone from moderate Republicans to Democrats. In other words, the division between Republicans and Democrats in our state simply doesn't compare to the divisions at the national level. I wonder also whether or not this is a function of sort of the way we do it. It's a governor's council. This is not a confirmation in the legislature where people do a fair amount of grandstanding. So it's not like the state Senate has to confirm. This is a body that was uniquely set up to review judicial appointments. And we just haven't seen that. Now, I'm reminded, in fact, that one of the best justices that we've ever had, which was Justice Marshall, who famously wrote the gay marriage decision.
Who ended up being the chief justice of the SJC.
Right. She was excoriated during her confirmation process because she was a white South African. And numbers of civil rights groups were concerned that if you're going to put a South African on the court, that it ought to be someone of color who had experienced what apartheid meant, etc. Now, what was interesting, of course, is that Justice Marshall was a white South African who had experienced, who had been an opponent of the apartheid regime and had gone through all sorts of travails as a student leader against apartheid. But that was fleshed out, and it certainly delayed her confirmation. We have seen problems like this with others, but for the most part, it seems to me it's been a very rational process as opposed to on the federal level, which is less than rational.
Right. So to that extent, we're very lucky and fortunate here in Massachusetts. But even in the story of Chief Justice Margaret Marshall that you remind us of, it just reminds me that it does matter, or the process seems to make it matter about who the person is who's being appointed to the bench. And I mean, is that the reason why we do still ask questions of opinion to these justices? justices, sure. Even if ultimately they're going to have to follow the letter of the law as vis-a-vis the Massachusetts state constitution?
No, absolutely. I mean, it does matter. It matters where you start. I don't think I can explain it better than that. In other words, it matters where you start. It may not determine where you finish. In other words, the rules of the case and your professional background may determine where you finish in a case, but it certainly matters where you start. I'm reminded when I just was a baby judge on my court that we were talking about a case that was worth $12,000, and one of my colleagues said, well, that's really a minor amount of money. Well, I didn't come from wealth. I represented laborers. I represented people who were accusing others of discrimination. $12,000 is a lot of money. Does that affect the outcome of the case? Well, it might affect the amount of time you spend on it. It may affect how in-depth you want to go. It may affect how motivated you are to try to find out what's really going on. So background and opinions certainly make a difference, but they're not determinative.
Okay, so this just still makes me wonder about the process and the point of the confirmation hearings themselves then, right? Because for example, the other answer that Justice Budd had that raised some eyebrows or drew criticism actually was she had some answers to questions about the sex offender registry. She'd been asked a hypothetical about, you know, what would happen if a 16-year-old boy, again, this is hypothetical, was found guilty of statutory rape after having sex with his 15-year-old girlfriend. And she said Justice Budd said she thinks that there are too many crimes included on the sex offender registry. And those comments led to Republican State Representative Shauna O'Connell to call for her nomination to be withdrawn. Today, several governor council's members stood by Budd's responses and said they were taken out of context. But why then do we even ask hypotheticals in situations like this? What kind of view does it give us into the jurisprudence of the nominee to the court?
There is no question that can be asked that would give you a one-to-one view of someone's jurisprudence, because we can't ask those questions and we shouldn't. You can't ask the justice, how would you vote on this particular case? You can't do that. You shouldn't do that, because in fact you want the decision to be the product of some reasoned deliberation, and you don't want people to come into the job with, you know, the way a legislator might. I'm here to carry out this particular view. But on the other hand, the questions about general attitudes and the questions about approach are questions that give some idea of where the justice might be going on this or that issue. It's not a one-to-one correlation at all. Some of the best justices of the Supreme Court were people who you never would have predicted the kind of judge that they were. But certainly the background gives you some idea of what's important to them, who they will empathize with, how hard they will work, those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
And the sex offender question, by the way, I mean, is a widely debated question, but it's hard to imagine how that would come to the court. If something is on the registry, the court is not about to be asked, well, should it come off? It's a question that deals with general attitudes, not any particular case.
Yeah. So back to your point about perspective and empathy, we should note again, as we did at the beginning, that Justice Budd is only the second African-American
right.
woman to serve on the state's highest court, following her confirmation today. So a little bit of history being made once again there. Governor Charlie Baker has appointed two others to the court as well, and there are two expected retirements this year coming
right.
up. So that means that Governor Baker is going to be able to make a really big mark on the SJC, 5 out of the 7 seats on the
right.
bench. I guess my last question to you is what kind of impact could that have?
It could be extraordinary. I don't think that the public realizes, first of all, the difference between the Supreme Judicial Court in the Massachusetts and the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Judicial Court interprets the Massachusetts Constitution and has done so creatively and interestingly over the past 40 years. The Massachusetts SJC threw out the death penalty when the Supreme Court would not. The Massachusetts Supreme Court has preserved the right to choose. Roe v. Wade could be reversed tomorrow. It wouldn't matter. So this court is a treasure that requires some careful determination of who should be on it. These three justices have made that determination. I look forward to who the two others would be here, because really, this is really what matters to the people of Massachusetts, not necessarily what the Supremes do.
Well, Nancy Gertner is WBUR's legal analyst and a Harvard Law School professor. She's also a former federal judge. Judge Gertner, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.